Former U.S. Representative Aaron Schock joined me, Jim Dye, on a recent podcast to give his side of the story surrounding his controversial indictment and subsequent dismissal of the criminal charges against him. Join me after this.
Hey, Jim Rosso, News Gazette Media Vice President, reminding you that we have a ton of podcasts available at newsgazette.com every day of the week, from Dave Gentry's Morning Show to Scott Beatty's News Hour to Brian Barnhart's Penny for Your Thoughts. Head to our website, newsgazette.com, and search for podcasts.
Hello, this is Jim Dye with the News Gazette. We have another in our series of podcasts. Today, our special guest is former U.S. Representative Aaron Schock, a Republican from Peoria. I think, and I may have get some of my years wrong, Aaron, so it's gone on so long, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was around 2015 that there were a series of news reports indicating some problems with gas mileage reimbursement in your office. In 2016, federal prosecutors hit you with a 24th count indictment, and just a few weeks ago, after a lengthy and bitter pretrial process, federal prosecutors dismissed all the charges in connection with a deferred prosecution agreement that requires you to pay $70,000 or almost $70,000 in reimbursements for improper mileage payments, whatever income tax obligations you have, and the case is essentially over. Did I summarize that properly?
That's correct.
Okay, so that's been quite a little odyssey. What do you have to say for yourself after all of this?
Well, look, I think I've seen the best of our, I've seen the worst of our justice system, and I've seen the best of our justice system in the past 4 years. As I said when I left office 4 years ago, among a lot of a flurry of news articles, most of which proved to be false, and some would scratch their head and say, well, gee, why would you leave if you didn't do anything wrong? But I think you've seen in Congress that even under the best of circumstances, it's a tough job, and people leave the position voluntarily after a number of years. I had served in public office for 14 years and made the decision then that rather than prove my innocence through this process, I would put the interest of my district ahead of my own and exit the stage and be able to move on with my life. Unfortunately, I was not able to move on with my life. Instead, my life was put on hold and at great expense, both in terms of lost income for myself as well as over $4 million in legal expenses, responding to a prosecutor who saw me as his ticket to stardom and decided to not only investigate the 6 years that I served as a U.S. congressman, which I think was fair game, but then after, in the absence of a crime, he then expanded his research into the 4 years I served as a state legislator. He then investigated the 4 years I served as a public school board member. He then investigated real estate transactions from when I was 18 years old. And when he didn't find anything there, he went and subpoenaed my business partners, whom I had not worked with until I left Congress, who are out in California, and audited their business practices, again, in search of a crime. He used over 30 federal agents over this two-year period, at expense of millions of dollars to the taxpayers, and ultimately, in the absence of crimes, attempted to create them. He was found to not only have lied to the federal judge in this process, he was found to have violated my constitutional rights on 11 different occasions, and he was found to have gone so far as to alter my bank statements before the grand jury, taking a single-page bank statement and cutting it in half to represent the direct opposite, which was that I was somehow hurting for cash when, in fact, I wasn't. So, unfortunately, what I saw was a prosecutor who acted in bad faith, who, according to the judge, lied to the court, according to the House General Counsel for the Congress, committed crimes against the House and me. And despite all of that, the case is now dismissed, and this prosecutor is not being prosecuted. This prosecutor is still employed by the Justice Department, but Main Justice was committed to justice. The folks out in Washington, D.C. wanted me prosecuted if, in fact, I had committed crimes, and it's why, despite them discovering how bad this prosecutor was acting, that he had lied, that he had committed violations of my constitutional rights. They didn't just dismiss the case. In fact, instead, they moved it to the Northern District, to the Chicago office, and they told them to take a clean look, take a fresh look, and then to move forward on the case where they felt there was merit. And ironically, this was the same team in Chicago who had prosecuted George Ryan and Rob Blagojevich, so they were not shrinking violets by any sense. They know corruption when they see it. And after 6 months of looking at the case, after 6 months of interviewing the key witnesses, they called my attorneys and said, look, we don't think your client is guilty of these 24 felonies. We don't think he committed these crimes. However, we think that his campaign organization ran afoul of some Federal Election Commission reporting requirements. And if he will agree to recognize that, then we will agree to drop this entire case against him. And, you know, it happened very quickly. I was actually overseas on a business trip and had to fly home unexpectedly to go to court for this case to be dismissed. But, you know, it was unfortunate that it drug on for 4 years, that I had to spend over $4 million, that I was basically, you know, my reputation was trampled on by these false accusations. And frankly, my constituents, who I was trying to save from an experience like this if I had remained in office, were put through it despite my attempts to do the otherwise. So it was unfortunate, but I'm thankful that I had a great great defense team who was willing to hold this set of prosecutors to account for their misdeeds, and ultimately who believed in my innocence and the cause of justice, and ultimately justice prevailed.
I think I've heard you say, excuse me, that presumption of innocence doesn't really apply. And I noted that after the case was dismissed, there was a lot of hostile reporting from some columnists who suggested, well, this business about the deferred prosecution agreement and the acknowledgement of mistakes in handling finances and the promise to repay some of that money is an indication of guilt. Can you address that? Can you talk about the $67,956 in reimbursements for improper mileage payments? What's that all about? Sure. I mean, I think you've indicated in the beginning that you had made mistakes in accounting. And is this reflective of those mistakes?
Right. Yeah. So first, let me say two things. One, mistakes are not crime. And we as every American should get comfort from the fact that if the IRS comes in and audits your books as a business or audits your books as an individual, as they do repeatedly throughout our country, and they find mistakes, which usually the IRS does, and they order you to pay them, that's not a crime. People are not prosecuted for that. However, if they find evidence that it was purposeful, that it was wantful, that there was a strategy and a scheme to defraud the IRS, then you're prosecuted. And that's a big difference. And the same thing when someone audits your own financials and they go through your checkbook and they find debits and credits out of places. They look for intent. They look for, was this person scheming? Was this person attempting to defraud? Or are the witnesses who are relevant to the transaction saying, look, this was my mistake, this was an error, and so forth. And ultimately, it's not what Aaron Schock thought. It's not what a jury thought. It's ultimately what the very agency, the Department of Justice, who 4 years ago, or rather 2 years ago, made the allegation, that same agency came back and said, you know what, there's no merit to these allegations. So for the naysayers and the pundits and the columnists who want to say, well, Aaron Schock got off or Aaron Schock was really guilty, look, you know, I can't control what some will write, some will think, but the facts are the facts, and the facts of the case are, according to the Department of Justice, lacking and do not merit prosecution, and the underlying charges themselves were without merit, which is why they dropped the case in its entirety. And it had nothing to do with the malfeasance of the first set of prosecutors, because if it were, the case would have gone away after the first set of prosecutors or the second set of prosecutors. But in fact, it was a whole new set of clean prosecutors in a new office in the Northern District of Chicago who had every ability to move forward on any felony counts they thought were justified, and instead decided there was no merit. With regards to the dollars and cents that I'm paying back, look, $68,000 is a decent sum of money. And for most people, they would say, gee, that's a lot of money. But to put this in relative terms, it's about $20,000 to three different committees. I had three separate political organizations during the 6 years, actually during the 8 years that I was a candidate for 2 years and then an office holder for 6 years. And they audited those expenses, which were over $20 million of expenses during that 8 year period. And there's about $20,000 of expenses in the three different committees over that eight year period that the government doesn't like. The government's not saying there was anything criminal. And frankly, I'm not even admitting that they were improper. What I'm simply saying is, out of abundance of caution, I'm agreeing to pay any expenses that are in question back. For example, the issue of mileage, we know that my mileage should have been done better, could have been done better, and in hindsight would be done better. But neither the government nor anyone else can tell exactly to a dollar amount how many miles I drove. But what we know is there was no attempt to defraud. There was no purpose to defraud. And that's ultimately what the witnesses in this case proved. It's ultimately what the witnesses told the government. It's ultimately why the witnesses the government dropped the case. But that doesn't mean that I couldn't have done a better job. But out of an abundance of caution, I said, look, I'll pay back 100% of all the mileage I've ever been paid, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because we weren't off by 50%. I mean, I was driving 30 to 40,000 miles a year in a 205 town district that is larger than nine states in the country. We weren't that far off, but I'm reimbursing all of it.
Let me clarify that point again. The agreement calls for you to pay $67,956. Are you saying that that number represents all of the reimbursements that you got from the three committees?
No, not all of the. It represents a number of things. One, it represents all of the mileage that I was ever paid by any campaign committee.
But it's all
over
the mileage.
The 8 years.
I mean, it's all of it.
It's all the mileage. It's all of the mileage, 100% of the mileage. But it also includes, for example, two plane flights. They audited 1,078 plane flights that I took over 8 years. And out of 1,078 plane flights, they found two that they took issue with. Again, they're not saying there was any fraud. They're not saying that there was any malfeasance. They're just saying it should have been paid for by this committee instead of that committee. One of them was paid for by the government. It should have been paid for by my campaign. And what I've agreed to do is I'm paying it out of my own pocket for both of them. Two flights out of 1,078 flights I took.
Okay, let's get back
to
them. So
when you go through every event, every expense, they audited $20 million in transactions. And I've said, look, could we have done a better job? Sure. But if you audit any organization, you're going to find an error rate of 0.5%, which is what that represents. Mm-hmm. And I'm not proud of that, but it's certainly not a crime.
But I just
and it's certainly not. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to clarify this one point. It's clear that you drove thousands of miles in your district. And it's clear that the committees reimbursed you for those that mileage. So obviously you drove many of those miles, but you're saying you paid back all of it just to settle this business?
That is correct.
Okay.
I will pay back 100% of all the mileage I was paid as a federal employee by the federal government, and all of the mileage I was paid back while I was a candidate campaigning for the congressional seat. During, I was a candidate for 2 years, and I was reimbursed by the campaign for mileage. And that's what this is. I'm repaying all of the campaign mileage, and I'm repaying all of the federal government mileage.
Okay, well, you should have negotiated 50% instead of 100. You could have saved yourself a few bucks.
Well, I have paid over $4 million of legal expenses over the course of 4 years. And if the federal government comes to you, and, Jim, you raise a good point. But at the end of the day, if the government comes to you and says, hey, you know those 24 felonies? Hey, you know that 80 to 100 years in prison that we had accused you of? Yeah, well, never mind. We're going to drop all that. If you agree to pay 20-some thousand to these three committees, which add up to $68,000, if you agree to pay this $68,000, we'll agree to acknowledge that you had no criminal intent and there were no crimes committed. I think most Americans would take that.
Okay, let's move to the second issue, the income tax thing. It says Schock obtained approximately $42,375 in income from, I guess, the sale of sports tickets over a multiple-year period and did not pay tax liabilities on that. And that apparently is what you're going to have to make up. I don't know what that's going to be or if they're going to say there is anything to pay or what. But what's that about? Can you explain that?
Sure.
The business with the tickets I'm talking about.
Yeah, we had so originally we had a practice of doing both sporting and music events.
Now this is for fundraisers, or
so most yeah. For example, let me give you an example. You all know John Boehner loves to play golf, right? And John Boehner was a Speaker of the House, and he'd have literally 20 or 30 golf outings every year where people would pay $5,000 or $6,000 to come play golf with the speaker, and the speaker then would pay their green fees, okay? Some people do ski trips where they go skiing and they pay the lift ticket prices and you go skiing with them. I prefer music events. I don't golf. I don't know how to golf, and I'm not a golfer. So we did events at sporting events. We did events at music events, the concerts and the like, and a very similar setup. We would pay their fees, and they would pay a ticket price to come to the event to be with me at a fundraising event. In the event, we bought over 500 tickets during this six-year period, over 500 tickets for Schock for Congress, the Schock Victory Committee, and the GOP Generation Y Leadership Pact.
Yeah, I should add that sporting tickets are a common fundraising vehicle, correct?
Yeah, if you look up, I pointed this out repeatedly. If you look up Dick Durbin's campaign last year, he spent over $10,000 just on NHL hockey tickets, okay? Now, the difference is when you buy, so sporting tickets happen, everybody buys them. What we did was, in the case of, you know, you buy a block of, for example, World Series tickets, or you buy a block of Super Bowl tickets, or you buy a block of concert tickets, you might buy 20 tickets or 40 tickets in some cases, and you only use 25 of the 30 tickets. We would sell 5 or 6 of them. And in the case of me selling them, oftentimes I would personally buy the tickets. The campaign would then pay for the tickets we used. And the tickets we didn't use, I would usually sell to friends, or I would sell them to a ticket broker if we weren't going to use them, if they were a high-value ticket. And in many cases, I failed to report the income on my personal income taxes. It wasn't because I was trying to skate by with anything. It was the same way as the government found when they audited my taxes. I gave a lot of money to charity, and I didn't write it off. I didn't keep track of all my receipts every time I give money to the Boy Scouts or I give money to St. Jude. There were thousands and thousands of dollars each year that I give to charity, and I didn't deduct. So needless to say, my taxes were in order when it came to all of my K-1 income, my 1099 income, my W-2 income. I have investment income. By and large, I'm a law-abiding person, right? I'm paying my taxes. But there were things they found where I had failed to report on my taxes. They determined there was no criminal intent. But as a part of the deal, they say you need to go back, amend your taxes, and pay any taxes owed on income you failed to report over this eight-year period.
So have you got it done yet? I think you had 6 months to complete it. That's a lot of money to come up with. Where do you stand now?
It's funny. Well, we as a part, you know, literally it just happened so quickly. We asked the government for their determination of the income in which years so that I amend and report as the government says I should. Because let alone, Lord knows, if I just went and hauled off and did it without getting what their numbers were, you know, I could then be making yet another mistake. So literally just Monday of this week, a couple days ago, the government provided to me the income in each year and the amounts in each year that they want me to amend. And so I'm going to do that in short order.
And at the end of 6 months, the whole thing is over, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, well, let's see. What does the future hold for Aaron Schock? I presume what you're doing now, which is you're now in real estate development, but tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so when I was in the state legislature, in addition to being in the state house, I was doing limited service and select service hotel development. I was involved with the development of about five hotels, a Hampton Inn, Holiday Inn, Express, Wingate by Wyndham, you know, the select service hotels in Central Illinois that make money. And I had a lot of fun building hotels and doing that in my early 20s. And so when I left Congress and this cloud was over me, I wasn't sure what I should do, but I knew I needed to make a living, and I knew I had to be able to pay for my attorney. So I was able to work with some folks in real estate development in the Los Angeles area, and I have a hotel right now that's under construction near the Los Angeles airport, and I've been working on that for the last 2 years, and it is slated to open a year from now. So next March, we'll hopefully have a 400-room hotel at the airport open. And I've got a couple other projects that I'm working on.
I understand you spent some time in China. Tell us about what's going on in China.
Yeah. Well, I did. When I first left Congress, I went overseas to China and India and was helping some of my real estate partners raise equity from high net worth individuals who are wanting to invest in U.S.-based real estate projects.
Oh, uh-huh.
But I've dialed that back as I've been spending more time on my own development projects in the last couple of years.
Okay. Well, you know, the big mystery here, I mean, there's a lot of things about this case that are curious, but there's also been a lot of exposure on some of the more interesting aspects of your case. But one thing that really has never gotten a lot of attention, at least public attention, is the source of these news leaks that initially alleged improprieties with the mileage. Now, you said these reports were inaccurate, but they were kind of dropped on a variety of news outlets in, what, early 2015, I think? And any thoughts about where that came from?
Well, we know that there were several Democratic research firms that were paid to push the stories. And through discovery, after Maya was indicted, we had subpoena power, and we were able to obtain emails that show from some of these research firms emailing the mainstream media outlets saying, we have been hired to push these stories on Mr. Schock. Did you know that he had a Downton Abbey office? Did you know that he had this shady business deal, that his house was in foreclosure, that he was taking free plane rides? I mean, it was story after story after story, all of which showed up to be false. You know, I have never seen the show Downton Abbey. It was completely a fictitious storyline, and yet to this day, they continue to repeat it. They claimed that my house was in foreclosure. I didn't even own a house at the time. They claimed that I was taking free plane rides, which, according to the government now, I wasn't. They claimed that I had sold a house for three times what it was worth to a donor and illegally profited. Turns out that's not true. And so to your question, really, not only who did it, but I think the bigger question that people should be asking is, why was the mainstream media so eager to consume and to regurgitate someone else's homework without secondarily verifying that which they were being fed, which they didn't do? And once one media outlet reported it, all the other media outlets reported the same.
I think you indicated to me that you regretted resigning from the House, but you thought it would be easier just to put any kind of ethical investigation issues behind you and go, and thinking that would be done, that you would be done with it. Looking back now, are you sorry you resigned from the House?
Well, I think it's what we know now is that what I was led to believe when I left, which was the baseless accusations against me would fall by the wayside, and I could move on with my life, turned out not to be true. And in fact, not only did the prosecutor in this case and the government at large spend millions of dollars turning my life upside down, I then ultimately was wrongfully charged of crimes I did not commit, for which I had to spend millions of dollars defending myself, only to have the government drop every single one of them. So in hindsight, I believe had I stayed in office, not only would I have been reelected, but more importantly, my reputation would have remained more intact, because the government never would have charged me for crimes I had never committed. And any of the financial mistakes that occurred, there were mechanisms in place in the House, as there are, for you know, reimbursements to be made, and the financial mistakes to be dealt with. I mean, I'm not the only congressman in America who have made mistakes in the counting of their office. It happens routinely. You can Google it and look it up. There's several members right now whose offices have been audited. So that's not problematic for a member to stay in office while that's occurring. But I was 33 years old. I've been in office for 14 years. And I decided at the time I could leave, spare everyone a lot of headaches, and I could move on with my life and do something else. And no, I didn't think I would be 37 years old 4 years later and still dealing with it, and at great expense to me and my family.
Now, I think I heard you just say that you don't think you would have been indicted if you had remained in the House. Did I hear that correctly? And why is that? If you can explain it again to make it more clear. You don't think, I mean, House members have been indicted before.
Because, first of all, I hadn't committed any crime. So rhetorically, the question would be, why was I indicted? It was because the prosecutor not only saw me as a sitting duck, he was convinced that because I had resigned, I must have done something wrong. And he said so much to my mother. He subpoenaed my mother and put my mother in the grand jury. And he flat out said, why would your son leave this job if he hadn't committed a crime? So there was a presumption of guilt before any of the facts were even presented, that because I had resigned from office, I must have committed crimes, which, you know, is unfair. It's not right, but that was the fact. And so had I remained in office, obviously I haven't committed crimes, so why would have I been indicted? And the presumption of guilt occurred when I left office. People said, oh my gosh, he must have done something terrible. In the case of this prosecutor, he went to great lengths to try and make something up.
My experience is that people are generally polite, so I would imagine that a lot of people that you have run across since the case was dismissed have been friendly, congratulatory, but maybe that's not correct. Have you had any people come up to you and say, man, you got away with murder there, you should be in the slam, or what has been the general reaction? And I believe you've also gone back to D.C. and had some meetings with your fellow former colleagues and indicated that, I think you've indicated that you would like to maybe see some modifications of the system that might prevent what you say happened to you from happening to somebody else?
Yeah. Generally, the response has been very positive. I think even people who might have think I could have run my office better should be relieved to know that there weren't any crimes that were committed, and ultimately that justice prevailed, and that in the absence of crimes, the government stopped spending more bad money after bad money and laid the case to rest. My colleagues in Washington, D.C., both Republicans and Democrats, have been overwhelmingly supportive. I was on the House floor yesterday during a vote series, and, you know, Democrats were coming up giving me a hug. Republicans were coming up giving me hugs because they know, but for the grace of God, there go they. And anytime a prosecutor who's politically motivated and sees a member of Congress as a target, they too could be turned upside down. They too could be falsely accused, and they too could have to spend millions of dollars if changes don't occur. And that's ultimately what I think needs to happen, which is, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about criminal justice reform, but the criminal justice reform discussion so far is centered around sentencing guidelines. It's centered around letting people out of jail earlier than their original sentences. And I think criminal justice reform really must start with the prosecutor's office in determining who in our society deserves prosecution, but more importantly, setting up safety mechanisms so that when prosecutors break the law and prosecutors commit the very crimes that they would prosecute everyone else for, that they themselves are held to the same account.
You know, the record on that.
What I mean by that is.
Go ahead.
What I mean by that is that the judge in my case found that the prosecutor lied. And if a individual had been found by the judge to have been lied, there's no one in America that questions that person who lied to the court would be prosecuted. And any attorney who violated someone's constitutional right 11 times would be before the state bar and losing their law license. but for the fact that this is a federal prosecutor, and they're held to different standards. They have immunity in their job, and it's not right. And so that's something that needs to change, not for my case is over, but for thousands of other Americans who might be targeted by an overzealous prosecutor, and that prosecutor knowing that they enjoy immunities that other Americans don't enjoy, and that's not right.
I'm gonna read a statement to you, and I want you to tell me if you agree or disagree and why. And here's the statement. Aaron Schock may have political aspirations, but the fact of the matter is that he's damaged goods and his career is over in politics. What do you say to that? Is that true or false, or you don't know?
Well, I don't know if that's your friend Tom Kasich there in the in the Urbana area, but it sounds like something he would write. Look, you know, people who never voted for me before this ordeal probably still will never vote for me, and he's probably one of them. But the fact of the matter is I have won every election that I have run in, beating a school board president when I was 19, beating an 8-year incumbent state rep when I was 22, and beating a 3-way primary for Congress when I was 26, and ultimately the general election when I was 27. So look, I would be the first to say overconfidence will kill anyone in an election, and I've never been overconfident when I run for positions. But ultimately, the only opinions that matter are those that are voters in a district that I would run in. You know, my last election, I won with 75% of the vote, which means that not only Republicans and independents, but a great number of Democrats voted for me. But, you know, it takes two to tango, and not only do voters want to have to elect me, but I have to want to run. And at this point, I plan to take a breath and enjoy private life.
What's your relationship to politics now? Are you just like everybody else? You just watch the show from your TV screen? I mean, do you pay a lot of attention to D.C. politics? And if so, do you have any thoughts about the kind of the poisonous nature of the relationship between Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill?
Well, look, I have a unique perspective because I served there. And, you know, literally yesterday I was on the floor of the House, which is maybe a little more of a front row seat than most can get. And I have relationships with a lot of these people on both sides of the aisle. So, in fact, a lot of the Democratic candidates who are running for president, I consider to be very good friends. Now, that doesn't mean I agree with them on a lot of political ideology, but I think, if anything, people can look at my service in government, both at the school board level all the way up to Congress, and see that I always tried to work with people, even people from completely different sides of the aisle. Some of my best friends in the Congress were people like Tulsi Gabbard and Beto O'Rourke. Joe Kennedy is a very good friend of mine still to this day. So these are people who, you know, even in their own parties have disparate views. But I think our country is less if our leaders from different political ideologies can't work together in a sane and productive way. And I think if anything has changed in the last 4 years since I left, is it has gotten more toxic. My colleagues whom I serve with that I go back and talk to say, man, it's gotten worse since you left. And so, you know, some would say, well, gee, aren't you relieved you're not there? Well, I'm saddened for our country because no matter who's serving, they deserve to be in an environment that's conducive for healthy debate and ultimately to get things done. You know, I'd like to see a lot of things get done, criminal justice reform being one of them. But, you know, there's a lot of challenges our country face. And if Republicans and Democrats could actually work together, there's no problem they can't overcome.
Well, I think you're right about that. I shouldn't see much hope of it coming to pass in D.C. But let's talk about the state of Illinois, because I know you used to serve in the legislature. And as long as we're wrapping this up, we might as well get to the state of Illinois. I mean, the state of Illinois is in a terrible mess now. And, of course, we have one-party control again. How do you, as a Republican, see Democrats working out the issues facing the state, particularly the financial issues?
Well, now that Bruce Rauner is gone, they have no one to blame. They have no one to blame but themselves. And so I don't know how J.B. Pritzker's proposed solutions are going to solve the problems that our state faces. I don't believe that when you look at the flight from Illinois of high-income earners and retirees leaving to low-tax states, we have led the nation the last 4 or 5 years of exodus, people from Illinois. I don't know how raising taxes on high-income earners and going to a marginal tax rate is going to help, but only exacerbate that problem and see further flight of high-income earners and ultimately less taxes to the government. Same thing with pensions. I don't know how you make promises to many of the state workers' unions sweeten and protect their pension benefits at a time when the pension obligation in the state of Illinois is at a higher per capita debt than any other state in the country, including California. And the fact that Illinois has more debt per person than anyone else in the country, and the Democrats under Speaker Madigan have controlled the Congress controlled the legislature for 20 to 30 years. There's been some Republican control of the Senate, but by and large, the Democrats have controlled the House since the 80s. And, the governor can only do so much, as we saw with Bruce Rauner. And we can, say, well, Bruce Rauner could have done better here, could have done better there. But ultimately, if the Democrats aren't willing to change the structure of our state pension systems, which are the leading cause of our debt, then raising taxes on wealthy people as they flee to low tax areas is only going to continue the death spiral. Beyond that, Illinois is a great state. We were the transportation hub of the world or of the country with the trains and the port and the airport. But look, Indiana has been eating our lunch. Missouri has been benefiting from our loss. The factories in my old area of Quincy that border Missouri have left and gone across the river into Missouri from Illinois. That's happening all over the state. So, I wish J.B. Pritzker well. I want him to be successful because he's my governor and this is a state I've lived in since I was 10 years old and I love. But I don't know how you continue to do the same thing and expect different results. And when it comes to partisan politics, as much as I have respect for many of my Democratic colleagues, the fact of the matter is your policies don't work. And you don't have to look any further than our neighboring states. You don't have to look any further than the health index of economies in states like Tennessee, in states like Florida, in states like Texas, where they have low taxes. And then you look at states where there's high taxes, like New Jersey and Illinois and California and Connecticut, and they have serious, serious problems with the unfunded liabilities in their pension systems. And it also happens to be those states have been predominantly controlled by Democrats for years.
Okay, well, on that not-so-happy note, I guess we'll call this discussion to an end. Our guest today has been former U.S. Rep. Aaron Schock, a member of Congress from Peoria. He now has his life in front of him and his life back with criminal charges against him dismissed. And so good luck, Aaron, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Jim, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you.